You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Welcome to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. I'm Jeff Metters, Director of Theology and Content at Send Network, and I'm here with President of Send Network, Vance Pittman. Vance, welcome again to New Churches Podcast. Good to see you.
Jeff, good to see you. Great to get to do this again together. It's a great time of year. You can smell baseball in the air. I've already been to two games myself.
Wow.
This is just electric time, man. Electric time.
Yeah, the Astros have a losing record, so the world is rejoicing right now.
Exactly.
It's tough. I know you're a Braves
guy.
I'm absolutely
a Braves guy, and you know when your team cheats, man, you just it's like Michigan in football. Like you can never
Oh, here we go. Oh, and there's the voice of our Red Sox fan, Aaron Cavan. Aaron is the senior pastor of Life Community Church, which he and his wife started back in 2007. And over the last 17 years, Life Community has grown from a Bible study in their living room to a growing family of churches there on the South Shore of Massachusetts, with three parishes in Quincy, Braintree, and Weymouth. And in addition to starting that church, Aaron is also a Send Network city missionary in Boston for the North American Mission Board. He and his wife, Courtney, have been married for 23 years, have five boys, and he is a big Red Sox fan and a big Celtics fan. But so we'll forgive him of all those things. Christ brings us together. Aaron, welcome again to the New Churches Podcast.
Well, Jeff, I'm glad to be back. I feel like I have to respond.
I know, because he's also a Michigan fan.
I'm also a Michigan fan. I grew up in Detroit, so I'm a diehard Michigan fan. I've been waiting for a national championship for over two decades. So, man, and it was sweet beating Alabama.
I knew you'd bring that up.
It's always sweeter to beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
Always sweeter. So
no doubt about it.
It was a good year. College football will be interesting moving forward.
So. It will be. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. No, I knew when I said it, I was kind of poking the bear there because I knew he's a Detroit boy. I knew that he was, but I couldn't just bang on your Reds or your Astros without mentioning the most recent cheating scandal that was the Michigan Wolverine. So we'll just leave it at that.
That's right. If we're gonna honor each other and slamming our teams.
That's right.
My Rockets are doing terrible, but we'll see. We won't even approach that pain that the NBA can bring. Vance, do you have an NBA team that you pull for?
I don't, man. I don't have an NBA team. I follow college basketball. A big UNLV Rebel fan. If you want to talk cheating scandals, we've had our own back in our history. But big UNLV Rebel fan. Love the Rebels. Love the season they just had. Best season they've had in probably over 15, 18 years. That's my – I mean, I'll follow the NBA like in May, June when the playoffs start and they start playing real basketball. But until then, I'm a guy that grew up watching Bird and Magic and Jordan. And, I loved the Pistons back in the day with Isaiah and Vinny Dumars and
Rodman
and Lambeer. So I love them and watching the game today, it's just gotten to be such a soft game. It's just hard to, it's hard to watch, but still love it in May, June. Cause then they really, really put it on the line.
Yeah. Yeah, playoff basketball. I mean, playoff anything it's hard to beat. Well, on today's show, we want to talk about being churches and becoming churches that multiply. And this is something that both of you brothers have been involved in so much. So, Vance, help us set the stage for this conversation. What does it mean, really, for a church to become a church that multiplies? And why does that matter for today's context?
Yeah, so we have five values that we talk about at Send Network, and one of them is simply stated, think multiplication. And the unpacking of that is this: God's global mission demands disciples and churches that multiply. Point being, we can't join in the mission of God without being about multiplication. It's not like it's an optional program that we can think about choosing to be a part of our fellowship. The only tool God gave us for the accomplishment of his mission locally and globally is the multiplication of disciples and churches. So we're not talking about just planting churches. We're talking about joining in God's activity of seeing his kingdom expand in cities and nations around the world. One disciple, one church cannot do that by themselves. We must be about multiplication. The New Testament models this. You saw disciples begin to multiply. You saw churches begin to multiply. The church initially kind of didn't even buy into it in Jerusalem, and God sent persecution to kind of force multiplication. Then when you get to Acts 13, you see the church at Antioch begin to model multiplication by sending out their best. But the bottom line is, too many churches in North America view multiplication as an optional program for the church. When you look at the New Testament demands, the mission demands disciples and churches that multiply.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that Antioch, I mean, goodness, wouldn't you love to have kept Paul and love to have kept Barnabas? I mean, good grief. Not those guys. Don't send those guys, Lord.
Absolutely.
That's who he sends. Yeah.
Without question.
So Aaron, we talked a little bit on another episode about some of your church planting journey. Can you share a little bit more about your personal journey and really coming to understand and implementing these principles of multiplication?
I think I mentioned before when we were together, there wasn't a lot of great material out when I first planted in 2007 or moved to the Boston area to plant in 2007. But one of the books I had mentioned before was Ralph Moore's book, Starting New Churches. And may have even mentioned, he said if churches that don't start a church within 5 years of them planting will likely never start another church. It's like every year after that, it decreases the possibility. To be honest with you, church planting was so new to me. I wasn't really even thinking about that. But one of the things that was helpful for me was really from the very beginning, our DNA was that we wanted to be a church planting church plant. And I didn't even know what that meant. So I would say that language, right? Because I heard it. I borrowed somebody else's language. But I at least, at the very least, in the core of my being, I wanted it to be true, whatever it looked like, right? So I wanted to be a church plant. I didn't just want to plant one church. I wanted to plant multiple churches. And then we moved to the Boston area. Our church planting journey was... everybody's is unique and everyone's is incredibly common. It's like, it's hard. It's not easy. You're tilling soil. You're spending time getting to know your neighbors. And in places like the Boston area, we were starting in an elementary school that was very uncommon here. While that was common in other parts of the country, it was very uncommon here. Matter of fact, quick side note, when I first filled out an application for the elementary school we wanted to meet in, I was prepared. I kind of had this defense built up in my mind in case they wanted to push back. And I was kind of ready to be like, well, churches should be able to use it if anyone else can, So I met with the head of custodial for the city of Quincy. And he came out and he said, so you want to start a church and a school? I said, yes, sir. And he said, do you worship Satan?
Oh.
I said, no, sir. We're on the other team. He said, all right, sounds good to me. Fill out an application every month, and wow, you can use the building as long as you want. I thought, man, if that was the only question, I was ready for that, dude. So, that was kind of the deal. It's so new and almost strange to the people around us. So it took a while. It was a revolving door of 30 to 50 different people every week. Worked jobs, was working on a lobster boat for a couple seasons, and just doing everything I could to provide for my family. So it wasn't that multiplication took a back seat. It's that there was a little bit. There was some addition necessary before multiplication, but I think what's important is we never lost sight of that idea that we want to be a church planting church plant. And what we realized is that while we didn't hit that 5-year mark, because we'd already decided from the very beginning that this is what we were going to give our life to, it just never really left us. So even in those early small group conversations, we were talking about planting our next church. Even in Sunday sermons, we were talking about planting our next church. Even when we didn't have enough money to fund ourselves, we were bringing in and highlighting other church planters so that our church could get a sense and a feel from the very beginning that we want to be a part of something that's bigger than us. And so because that was a part of our DNA from the beginning, that really shaped our culture so that when it did come time for us to really begin to push the gas pedal on multiplication. It wasn't a foreign concept. In some ways, it was something that people were ready for because that's what we'd been talking about since day one when we were sitting in our living room.
Yeah, it's like so much of that is you have to have the concept, the true biblical concept of mission that sometimes church planters, it's the mission is plant a, start a good service. And that's not the mission. That's like one aspect of the outline of 100 bullet points of things you need to do to be a healthy, thriving New Testament church. The mission is evangelism, discipleship, planting, more. There's more and more going on. And so when you think about, for both of you, I mean, Aaron, you've been involved 15 plus years. Vance, you've been involved over 20 years. How can pastors create a culture of multiplication within their congregations?
I think culture is the exact right word because here's what I've learned. Culture precedes calling. Like if you think that somebody randomly is going to self-identify as a church planter in your church and you don't have a culture of multiplication, you're looking for the wrong, like you're like six steps behind. So what happens is when you start to create a culture, and what I would say is before you multiply churches, you should get really good at multiplying disciples. I can't tell you how many young church planters or potential church planters, guys that I meet that want to plant a church. And so they schedule a phone call with me or we meet and they go, I want to plant a church. What's my next step? And I will ask this simple question. I'll say, can you give me an example of a individual that you either have or are currently discipling to follow Jesus? And I am shocked at how many of those guys go, no. And then my response is always the same. That I'm not saying you should never plant a church. I'm simply saying it's not your next step. And I think at the end of the day, it starts with multiplication disciples. Robbie Gallaty says it this way, if the gospel got to us so that it could get to other people. Like that's what we're like, the gospel moves. It wasn't intended to stay with us. And so as we multiply disciples, and now what's happened in our church as we've continued down this road, even our leaders, our ministry coordinators, our directors, they see their role at our church, not facilitating ministry, but raising up the next leader because we want to start more churches. And all those churches are going to need a worship leader. All those churches are going to need someone to do life kids. All those people are going to need someone to do spiritual formation. All those churches are going to need lead pastors. So the question for us is not just how do we get as many people as we can in our building? How do we get as many people gathered here? But how are we creating a culture that is more about scattering than gathering. That's more about sending capacity than even seeding capacity and helping people to embrace that kind of culture starts with multiplying disciples from the very beginning.
I completely agree with what Aaron said. I'm going to boil down what Aaron just said with a few bullets for the pastor that's listening or the church planner saying, how do I create this culture? I think what you heard Aaron say, first of all, is you got to cast a kingdom vision. Jeff, you alluded to this a moment ago when you said you talked about mission, and the mission is not to plant a church. And once a church is planted, it's not that the church does missions. God births churches to accomplish his mission, and his mission is local and it's global. And you have to cast a compelling kingdom vision that is bigger than a church. It's bigger than a city. It's even bigger than a nation. It's about God's global movement that's happening all over the world. And when you cast that vision, it becomes very obvious our church can't do this by ourselves. And so you begin to create a culture for multiplication by helping people understand the mission is bigger than us. It's bigger than what we can do by ourselves. Even if we try to win everybody in our city to Christ, we can't accomplish the mission by ourselves. So cast a kingdom vision. Number two, you got to create a sending culture. Aaron talked about this. It's about culture, creating this culture of sending people out of your fellowship, sending them. One of the ways we did this at Hope, we would, in our membership process, we would tell every person joining our church, if you join our church, we're going to do everything we can to talk you into leaving. And part of that was about building a sending culture that we didn't bring you here to just allow you to stay. We brought you here to help you live out your mission, live out the mission of God in your own personal life. So create a sending culture. Thirdly, you got to practice this. It's got to be something that you practice on a regular basis. You're practicing what it looks like to make disciples. You're practicing what it looks like to send people out. There got to be practical steps in your church that allow people to live this out. And then fourthly, you got to celebrate it. You've heard the adage, what gets celebrated gets done. You got to celebrate Multiplication. You can celebrate it by commissioning, when you commission teams or individuals to send them out. One of the ways we celebrated it at Hope, we always did generosity thoughts every week that connected giving to the mission of God and the vision that God has had given us as a fellowship. And so we were always highlighting people being sent out, churches being planted, disciples being made. But those are some practical things, I think, to say what Aaron was saying. It's about creating and casting a vision, creating that culture, then practicing that, creating practical ways to live that out for your people, and then celebrating it, celebrating the activity of multiplication.
Yeah, man. You know, I'd add two things I just thought of as you guys were talking. We alluded to it earlier, and there in Acts, the church at Antioch. And if you look at the text, it says that they were praying. And then the Lord said, set apart for me.
Yeah, man.
So I was actually coaching with a church planner last week, and he said, how can we become a multiplying, how can we become a sending church? And I said, add praying for it to your pastor, your weekly pastor meeting, your staff meetings, put it on there. Lord, who are the next people we need to send out? Who's the plant? Who are the teams? Who needs to go and start a new work? Like, put it on there every week and pray for it nonstop. And then secondly, any church that's listening about how could we become a sending church is, well, you're on the New Churches podcast. Just go ahead and click over to newchurches.com and sign up for the Sending Church Masterclass. Tons of free videos, tons of great content to teach you and model for you. Here's how you can become a sending church. And know out of the gate, it is going to cost you. And so how have you guys, Aaron, you go first in advance, how have you had to navigate those potential challenges or resistance when transitioning a church to that next growth stage of becoming a church that's going to be a multiplying church?
Yeah, I mean, definitely there's some tensions that come with that. You know, one of the things I found out early on was I always assumed that people that were change adverse were tied to a particular denomination or a demograph. So I figured a brand new church plant in Boston, bunch of young folks excited about what we're doing. I started talking about reaching their neighbors, multiplying disciples, stepping into spaces where God's called them, and things got uncomfortable. And turns out humans are change adverse. So it's hard sometimes to help them navigate that. But you know, some of the things that, you know, I'll just tell you a quick story about ours. You know, when we first sent out our first church plant out of Life Community in Quincy, we were starting Life Community Church in Braintree, and we were going to send 50 people, $50,000. We had a guy that was already kind of one of our elders that was already making disciples and was going to take the lead on that church plant. And we're not talking, you know, part of what we realized over time was our multiplication strategy was less about planting churches, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 miles away. And we wanted to start planting churches 3 miles away. We wanted to kind of saturate the area so that we could collaborate more effectively, create more synergy. And so, you know, we sent them out and, you know, it was hard. The first one was hard, right? Like people didn't understand. They were like, why would we separate? We're so much stronger together. We're bigger. And the truth is what they were saying was true. They just didn't understand what they were saying. They were saying we're stronger together. When we're saying, yes, we're stronger together, that's why we should multiply and expand our reach. But I think, you know, when we started doing down that, going down that path or whatever, we underestimated how like sad people would be. Like, so I remember I took a 4-week vacation, kind of a mini sabbatical right before Braintree had launched. And I remember one of my boys at the time, he was probably 6 or 7 years old, and he came to realize that one of his friends that was going to be going to the Braintree parish, the plant, that he realized that this was going to be his last Sunday with his friend. Mm. And I remember sitting at my dinner table and he said, "You mean this is the last time I'm going to see them?" And I go, "Well, yeah, on Sundays, but you know, we're not going to be around each other all the time anymore. We want to plant this church." And he looked at me and with tears in his eyes, he said, "Why did you make us be gone for the last 4 weeks when this was the last Sunday I was going to get to be with my friend?" Wow. And for a moment there, I thought, man, it was a visceral moment. Two things happened. One, I realized how we underestimated people's sadness. Number two, I had severely underestimated how every decision I made as a planter was directly affecting my family. Which that's probably a different podcast, but it was a reality. And my kids, even at 5 and 6 years old, felt that. So that helped me though, because when we went to the commissioning Sunday, here's what I told our congregation. I said, listen, a lot of you are sad and you're wondering why we can't stay together and do this together. And I want you to know I'm sad. Pastor John and I we're very close friends. We love doing ministry together. I'm going to be sad that he's not going to be preaching here on Sundays. We're not going to be doing this together. But our sadness is a gift because it reminds us that we're not in heaven yet. And if we're not in heaven yet, then that means there's still work to be done. So that's something, that's a line we've used with people over and over and over again. It's okay to be sad. You should feel that. That's a good thing that you feel. It means that you were all in, that you're living with heart, that you are passionate about the relationships you have. But you should feel a bit of a tension as we separate because there is a little bit of death. And the reason you feel that tension is because we're not in heaven yet. We're not done yet. There's more work to be done, which means we need to continue to multiply so that we can reach more people in our cities.
Vance, that's anything you would add to some of Aaron's very personal challenges, Aaron? Thank you for sharing those things.
Yeah. I mean, just what an incredible statement. I hope everybody will rewind and listen to the statement that he just made because it's so powerful. And as you said it, Aaron, my first thought was, man, that is so gospel-centered. I mean, that's the reality of the gospel. I mean, think about the sadness on the Friday of the disciples with Christ on the cross and the death, and then the Saturday of loneliness and wonder, and then yet, you know, Easter Sunday morning, the gospel, Jesus comes back to life and death is defeated. I mean, there's the what you're talking about is the gospel narrative being fleshed out in our lives as we live out the gospel. It's those seed being sown. And what did Jesus say? The seed's got to die first before there can be life on the other side. And so powerful. I guess the only thing I would add to it is to just remember the promise that God's given us in his word. And that is that Jesus said, if we seek first the kingdom, all these things will be added unto you. And Paul said it this way in Philippians chapter 4. He said, my God will supply all your needs according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. Is there a cost to multiplication? Absolutely. Is it painful to multiply? Absolutely. But here's what I've learned in 20 years of living this out in my own life and in our church. You simply can't outgive God. There's a cost to not multiplying. There's a cost of missing out on what God is doing and missing out on reward in heaven and missing out on seeing life changed. And when you join in the activity of God through multiplication, all I can tell you is put on your seatbelt because you can't outgive the Father. I'll tell you a story from our early days. So the very first church we planted out of our church in Las Vegas, we were a year and a half old. We'd made a lot of disciples before we had our first public worship service. So our public, about a year and a half in, we had about 300 people attending our worship services, but we'd made almost 200 disciples before we publicly launched. So our strategy was a little bit different. So a year and a half into public worship services, we bring in a team, they spend 6 months in residence with us, and we're going to send them out to go plant a new church on the other side of the city called Life Baptist Church. And we stand up in front of our church and we say, hey, we want to send families with them. We want people to go. And I'll never forget when we had the response that 40 of our 300 said they were going to go with this new church plant. And just being transparent, it's not the 40 I would have picked. Like, it was the best people we had. It was some of our best volunteers, our setup team, some of our best leaders, some of our best givers. And I'm thinking, this is not good. Like, this is, we're barely, you know, getting above water. And now we're the very best. And here's what I can tell you. The next weekend, they went, and now, you know, that's been over 20 years ago, and that church is now a church of about 1,500 people that's planting churches out of its church. But they launched, and that next weekend, we had at Hope the largest in attendance and offering we'd had in our year and a half history, having sent 40 out. I don't know where they came from, but God taught me this principle that you just cannot give him. When you seek first the kingdom, the church becomes a conduit through which God can be a blessing to the accomplishment of his mission, and he will be faithful to do that. And we live that principle out 80 times over the next 20 years, and not always on my timeline, but God was always faithful to provide and meet the needs that we had along the way. And so, yeah, there's a cost, but there's a greater cost to missing out on the blessing and activity of God if you're not willing to pay that price. And if you are willing to pay that price, put your seatbelt on because you can't outgive him. Mm.
It reminds me of what Charles Spurgeon says about the miracle of the fish and the loaves. We just bring them and bring what we've got. Lord will bless it and he'll do it more than we could think or imagine.
I love it.
Guys, thank you so much. It's a great conversation on becoming a church planting, sending, multiplying church. Go to newchurches.com and check out that Sending Church Masterclass. And I know you'll be blessed. Well, thank you for listening to the New Churches Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.